Kavchish, hawa, tuxknusum, salama, thank you, and welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Today, as summer 2026 approaches, the city and borough of Juno prepares for the glacial lake outburst flood season. We have folks here for this month's borough breakdown to take us through the preparation, what to expect, and the ongoing HESCO barrier construction. This Saturday, a full day of activities is in store for the Strings Through Time, an evening of Ukrainian music featuring the 65-string instrument, the bandura. We have a preview of what's in store, including the special guests visiting Juno for this concert. And our first segment of the season of Garden Talk. Today, we focus on soil, prepping it, warming it, and more. Those conversations are coming up later this hour on Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO. You can also catch us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. But first, this week's Tlingit Word of the Week.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kushtak-U Bill Fawcett, and the word this week is hicht.
Hicht.
That means frog. And here's a sentence. There are very many frogs. Let's hear it again.
Hicht.
Frog. Gunnish cheese to Chene Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kushtak o Ish Bill Fawcett was Slukach Adi and the child of a southern Toshone man who passed away before Bill was born. His mother later married Tsihwa Bill Fawcett, who helped raise Bill. He lived on Akkwan Ani and enjoyed working with advanced language learners, helping them answer difficult questions about the language.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Another summer is upon us, and last year, the Mendenhall River crested at 16.65 feet on August 13th, 2025, a new peak record known as GLOF, or the Glacial Lake Outburst Flood. What's the anticipation for this year? How prepared are we? Will there even be a flood? Well, I'm joined now in the studio to talk more about this by Nate Rumsey, Deputy Director of Engineering and Public Works for the City, Borough, and Juno. Gunathjish, wasiyati. How are you today, Nate?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent. I also have Ryan O'Shaughnessy, who people have heard a lot of over the last year. There are a lot of meetings, a lot of public-facing. He's the Emergency Programs Director for the City and Borough of Juno. Ryan, welcome in. Thank you
Thanks,
so much.
Thanks, Boston, for having us.
Good. And, of course, Phil.
Hibshin.
Just kidding. I almost said it. Phil Hibshin, Engagement Specialist from the City and Borough of Juno Communications Department. Gunnar Cheese, Phil, welcome
Thank
back in.
You.
Thank you so much for being here. So, yeah, it's a pleasure to have you all in here. I first want to mention that there's a couple things coming up that are public facing, right, Ryan? On June 9th, there is a panel that you are all going to do. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So on June 9th, we're having more of a community conversation rather than a panel.
Okay.
So we're getting together with a bunch of our partners, our agency partners, right? Like Tlingit Haida and the Weather Service and all those agencies, DOT, the Coast Guard, but also our community partners, right? So Red Cross, Salvation Army, United Way, the Food Bank, and all those kinds of partners that also are preparing for flooding and to support the community through that.
Okay. And where's that going to be at?
That is going to be at Thunder Mountain Middle School at 6 o'clock on June 9th.
On June 9th. Okay. And there is going to be a KTOO panel later in the month on June 30th, I think they moved the date to, that will have some of the same partner agencies and such. And that's a cool thing that you all sort of got together last year, I believe, right? Like all the partners came together and kind of created a whole system, because a lot of people were doing things separately and you all realized, hey, maybe we should all just be on a task force together to make everything happen, and all the lines of communication are channeling into one place. And so that's going to continue for this year.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we all have our different roles to play. Like I mentioned, different agencies, community organizations. We all have our lanes and our different roles to play, and making sure that everybody is moving in the same direction, you know, moving to the same tempo is a big part of what my office does at the CBJ.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nate, tell me a little bit about what your role is in all of this GLOF business.
So I work with Engineering and Public Works, and our focus has really been on trying to execute the mitigation measures. So you've seen these huge HESCO walls out in the valley. Last year with the phase one work, we were really focused on just trying to protect against flood activity for the area that was at most risk. So obviously people, safety, things like that, but also property. And where the flood had hit in 2024 showed us if water gets into some of these areas, it can just do a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm.
And so focused on getting done what we could get done that year. We're back at it this year, working hard, trying to build up the barrier a little bit this year. So we're doing some reinforcement work, repairs. We're also raising it because we think that we haven't seen the worst of the severity so far.
And this is this part of phase two, or is phase two not started yet?
Phase two is also ongoing, but that's being performed by the Army Corps of Engineers through a partnership agreement that we have with them.
With the city, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, just trying to get as much protection as we can, because we think that we haven't seen the worst of it yet, and we want to be prepared, and we want to make sure that folks are safe.
And Ryan, I know we've had some experts on this show, and I know our news department has talked to a bunch of the experts and the people who are predicting, you know, the potentiality of things. My brain goes to, like, does this harsh winter we have going to impact anything that's going up on there at Suicide Basin? Is that going to make more potential, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question, and a lot of people have been asking it.
Yeah.
So early indications are that the snowpack, you know, we got a ton of snow, and then it sort of melted off, and then we got more snow. And early indications are that the total volume of water that was inside of that snowpack wasn't significantly different from years past.
Okay. All right. So that doesn't mean it's going to get up to 20 feet necessarily this year.
No. And it's all really, you know, the way that would impact the whole system would be the timing of the basin fill, right, rather
mm-hmm.
than the outcome of the flood.
I see. Okay. And do you know what the predictions are for the next few years? Are we potentially going to break another record?
That's a good question. So CBJ is really in the business of like Nate said, right? Like Engineering and Public Works is building the barriers the best available information and data that we can get from our science partners. My team is focused on making sure that all of our community partners and agency players are aligned and focused in the right direction. But as far as that forecasting and that prediction, that's really best done by the National Weather Service and UAS and USGS and all of those agencies.
There's a couple websites I want to give out just for people. There's obviously juno.org, which has a tab right on the main page right now, which says flood preparedness, and you can go there. There's tons of information there. about what the city is doing and what the process is and what's going on, and preparing yourselves for the potential of what might happen, just so you know what's going on. And then you can also go to junoflood.org, which has a lot of the information that I was just asking Ryan about, the National Weather Service, and you can see like where the lines are, of how far it rises in certain parts of the areas and things like that. And you can see those predictions and the work that they're doing to try to figure that out.
Yeah, and this year's the monitoring, the basin monitoring page that's linked on junoflood.org will be online in the next week or so. So looking forward to that also.
Yeah, and just to put a plug in here as well, KTOO will also be having cameras and watching it. You know, we'll have that 24-hour coverage and stuff going on during that time too. That's all part of public safety and public awareness and making sure everybody knows what's going on. So tell me a little bit, Nate, about the mitigation efforts. Like, what are we doing? Is it more than just the HESCO barriers? What else are we doing?
Yeah, in order for the HESCO barriers to work properly, which essentially think of that as a big wall that's preventing water from getting out of the river and into places it shouldn't be, we have to make sure that the riverbanks are, you know, structurally sound and don't do things that we don't want them to do. But that's a difficult process because we also want to, you know, prevent any unanticipated consequences of doing work in the river. But we're working, we've had contractors out there already for probably about 6 weeks getting work done. We're anticipating getting that work done by mid-July. The Army Corps is also on track to get their work done by mid-July. But it's really that combination of the barriers, preventing the water from getting where it shouldn't be, and then getting that armoring work, that kind of riverbank reinforcement work done so that the barriers don't, for example, fall into the river when they get flooded, when they get hit with water.
Yeah, and this is probably common sense, but people shouldn't mess with those barriers, right? Don't be doing stuff to the barriers.
They should not. They are pretty simple structures, but if things are happening that could impact their ability to work like they're supposed to, it's a big system. Once this project is complete, it's supposed to act kind of as one big piece of infrastructure that we're going to have to keep maintaining in the future. And so we know they're not fun to have in your backyards, and I want to put in a plug to the community partners that we have, the homeowners that have had to deal with the frustration of construction equipment and stuff in their backyard. But it's been a really good partnership, and we couldn't have done it without their support and help.
Yeah, I remember seeing pictures of people like having their little planters on the barrier.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of, it was kind of trying to beautify it a little
bit.
I totally
okay.
get that idea.
That's
you know?
Okay. Yeah,
that's all right. But don't mess with them in any structural way for sure. And Ryan, what can I do as a homeowner or someone who lives out that way to be prepared individually for what might happen? I know you have a lot of partners that are doing all kinds of things and reach out, but what can I do as a person?
Yeah, the two most important things that somebody can do to prepare for a flood are one, purchase flood insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program. That's federally subsidized flood insurance. Anybody who lives in the valley is eligible for it. You can reach out to any private insurance broker provider, and they can get you navigated to those National Flood Insurance Program policies. But they're relatively affordable. And very important to note on those is that there is a 30-day waiting period from the moment you start the policy until you can file a claim. So really important to get those National Flood Insurance policies early, right now, if you don't have them.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was the second thing?
The second thing that somebody can do is sign up for emergency alerts.
Yay.
It's the best way to stay informed for what's going on. A really easy way to do that is text CBJ to the number 38276, and you'll be enrolled for emergency alerts.
38276.
You got it.
38276.
And you just type
CBJ.
In CBJ in the message body there and type it, and you'll get a message back that says you're signed up for emergency alerts.
Absolutely. And then also you guys have wonderful tips on the website there at juno.org in terms of how to prepare for the flood. You covered a couple of them, the most important, but also just be ready to go too, right? Like have a go bag, like if something happens, because I know there's that sense of like, I'm going to hunker down and I'm not going to go anywhere, but you got to be ready, right?
You got to be ready. And like Nate said, I mean, this is essentially a big wall with a lot of water behind it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there were to be a problem, last year we saw tree strikes and things, and we're very, very confident in the HESCO barrier's ability to protect the community. But this is a natural disaster, and unforeseen things happen in those circumstances. So if those barriers come down, the amount of water flooding into the neighborhood will be fast. It will be basically like a flash flood.
Yeah.
Very, very dangerous situation. So we really want everyone to evacuate. And when we start putting notifications out that the basin's overtopping or we're starting to see activity, we'd love for people to have a go bag and kind of know where they're going to go and where they're going to stay for that night.
And when you think about the future, obviously you're thinking short term for this summer, but and I know there's mitigation efforts thinking about long term, like with the Army Corps thinking they're doing some research trying to figure out what might happen. What are you thinking about in terms of the next couple years, Ryan, as emergency preparedness? Is there things that you have to be considering? Or is it one summer at a time?
You know, Boston, the thing that sort of stands out to me when I look back over the last couple of years, mm-hmm. right, and I see what's happened with the flooding, is that, you know, we continually see folks on the HESCO barriers during the event or on or around bridges or around the river. And I just, if there's one thing I could share with folks, it's really just that, you know, it's a very serious situation. If people get into that water, it's very cold, it's very fast. And so I would love to see over the next couple of years, folks really take that seriously and stay away from the river while we're having these events.
Educate yourselves. Yeah, absolutely.
That's right.
And we're definitely more prepared than we were a few years ago, obviously. I think that's definitely the case, right? I mean, the HESCO barriers make a huge difference. And then, Phil, is there things from your end that you want to share? I know we mentioned the June 9th event that will be happening, mm-hmm. And that is for the public to attend, right?
Yes, it is for the public to attend, so definitely go to that if you are interested or want to learn more about what's going on. You guys have already talked to bit about links and how to sign up for alerts and stuff. The other URL I will plug is bit.ly/CBJ newsletters.
Okay.
That's another really good resource for people. We recently started a flood newsletter that is going to hold a lot of information just about meetings like the June 9th one coming up, sandbagging events, all that kind of stuff. We really want people who are impacted by this to have the information they need when they need it. So we're developing those channels and we want people to sign up for them. So please, please do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. That sounds so good. Well, this is great. I don't think we're all ready for it. We just got through this winter and now we got to be thinking about this. But I mean, it is something that we have to deal with. And is there anything else we want to leave people with? Nate, Ryan? Besides, you know, don't stand on them, don't be near the bridges. Anything else that you want people to think about for this year? I know there's also the study going on in terms of the federal government buyout program. That's a whole separate thing in terms of the home buyout, but that's like a different sort of story here. But we're just really thinking about the preparedness for mm-hmm. this year.
Right? You know, one other thing I'll plug, Boston, is a lot of folks, you know, when we do in 2024, we saw a lot of folks rushing to help and volunteer. Just a plug for our partners at the Red Cross and United Way and signing up to volunteer and be a disaster relief volunteer ahead of a disaster is always a better move and helps those agencies to be more nimble. So just a plug for those agencies, Red Cross of Southeast Alaska and United Way of Southeast Alaska.
Excellent. Okay. Nate Rumsey, Ryan O'Shaughnessy, Phil Hibshin from the City and Bruno of Juneau. Thank you so much for being here and sharing with us about this summer's GLOF preparedness and preparation. Appreciate you being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Boston.
This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. We'll be right back. Oh, music. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host. That is Solomia Stahiv, and that is a track of hers, and that is her playing the bandura and also singing, which is fantastic. And you're going to be seeing a concert this weekend called Strings Through Time. It's a live concert of Ukrainian and world music at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. It's this Saturday, May 23rd. It's an immersive program that will bring the soul of Ukrainian culture to life through the voice of the bandura. It's a 60, this is insane, a 65-string instrument. I don't know, how is that even possible? I was looking up the history of this thing. It's so cool. We're going to learn a little bit about that history of that instrument today. And it's going to be alongside choral music with a collaboration from the Juno Community Chorus. And I am joined in the studio now by, I guess, a musician and two fans is what they said before we got on the air.
Oh, yeah.
So I have
big fans.
Missouri Smythe from the Juno Community Chorus, right? Mm-hmm. And I also have Elena, and how do you say your last name, Elena?
Zuba.
And then I also have Aaron Youngstrom.
A little easy to say.
Youngstrom. Yeah. Youngstrom,
yeah,
maybe.
They're beautiful.
It's all good. So, and Aaron, you're working at the Jack.
Yes.
You're over there working at Centennial Hall and doing things. So tell me a little bit about how this concert first came into your sphere. Where'd this idea come from? All that good stuff.
Yeah. So back in February, our dear friend here, Elena, came to Centennial Hall, and she was so excited, so jazzed. She found this two performers when she went to Anchorage and saw them live in concert and just got the bug about them. And she was inquiring with me at Centennial Hall about how renting the space and how we could possibly get these performers here to Juno because they were just so affecting. And from there, we got in touch with the performers and they were on the calendar for this upcoming weekend, Saturday at 7 o'clock. Get your tickets. And we've been working together ever since. And Elena then kind of ran from there, getting the whole community. I'd be surprised if you haven't heard about this event yet. So Elena then kind of took it over and brought in the community chorus. And
so Elena, tell me, so you were in Anchorage and you just happened to see this concert? Or how did you first discover this?
Not exactly. I found it on Facebook around October, November, that they perform in Anchorage. And I contacted Solomia through her website if they could come to Juno. But they were doing they couldn't do it in January, so they were on their tour around the United States. It was kind of short notice from November to January. So I told them that I would come to see them in Anchorage. So I got standby ticket and flew to Anchorage for their concert and make sure to show them that I'm not some crazy person, a bot, and convince them to come to Juno.
Right. An AI bot.
So we met in January. It was in this wonderful church in Anchorage because the theme of their concert series was Christmas carols. So, yeah, once I saw them live, and it was an amazing performance, I started crying right away because just that instrument and Solomia's dad, Ostap, singing brought so many memories, so many emotions. It's something special that, you know, when you touches, you know, different parts of your soul.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was wonderful. So, yeah, I convinced them to come to Juno.
I've been listening to the bandura music all this week, just sort of getting in the mood of it. And it is really affecting. Like, it's really, really cool. So what do you know about the history of the bandura?
Well, there's discussions where all the string, that type of instrument came from. And, you know, you can find similar instrument in Japan, in India, in, you know, Persia and Egypt. And like around the Mediterranean, there's a lot of similarities, and I'm sure there's a lot of discussion in the professional field where it's all started. But one of the first instrument that sort of resembles bandura is found on a drawing in St. Sophia's Cathedral in the center of Kyiv, and that cathedral is built in the 11th century.
Wow.
And it's a small instrument, someone playing with the left hand. We, of course, don't know the nationality of the person. and what language they spoke. They were local or they were from Byzantium, from East Roman Empire, you know, because that's the San Sophia's Cathedral built at the time when Eastern Roman Empire still existed, and it was built as as a replica of that church in Constantinople that now is a mosque. But we, of course, so it looks like Bandura, but we don't know. So, you know, someone can claim that it's 1,000 years old, but we don't know.
Yeah.
There is a lot of drawings and there's a lot of paintings from 18th, 17th century that where instrument looks very familiar. And there's some discussions how it needs to be exactly called. Is it Kobza or Bandura? But I would say very similar instruments are from 18th century.
Yeah, you mentioned the Kobza. What was it?
Kobza.
Kobza. Yeah, I was reading about it because it was like they say that Bandura was sort of grown out of that instrument, and then it was sort of they were describing it as like it's like lute like, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like a different instrument because obviously it's 65 strings. That's amazing. So the base of it is really wide to get all those strings in there, but it's just gorgeous. So you mentioned that Solomia, the other performer, Ostap, that's her father.
That's her father.
Oh, that's so amazing. So they're just touring around and they're going to come to Juneau. Mm-hmm. That is so cool.
We're so excited.
So you say, okay, I secure these folks and making this happen. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon, by the way. We're talking about this cool concert, Strings Through Time, which is happening on Saturday, May 23rd. As Aaron said, go to jahc.org for more information and tickets. So you secure them coming in, but you're like, hold on a second, that ain't enough. I know somebody named Missouri who can also bring more to this concert. So how did you get Missouri involved?
That's interesting. Thank you. Well, around February, we were looking for partners to collaborate. And at that time, you know, everyone's busy with Juneau Jazz or planning for a Folk Fest. So everyone already have in Juneau, everyone already have plans a year in advance when it comes to music. So
yeah, May is a busy time around here.
So around March, we were kind of giving up on finding partners, and I ran into Missouri at the gym.
Oh, okay.
And so Juneau.
I love it. That is so Juneau. Yeah.
And we start talking about other things, and then she mentioned she knows someone on the East Coast who plays bandura, and I'm like, hold on.
You're like, wait a minute. So, Missouri, what happened? So you said I can be a part of this. I can help you out. So, yeah.
So when when I had the conversation with Olena, I knew her because I substitute teach in the school district and happened to be at Montessori, so I knew her. We chatted a bit, and then this came up. And what was interesting about this conversation that I had with her when I said I know somebody in New York who plays the bandura 26 years ago, I was the artistic director for the Alaska Youth Choir. One of the first tours that I had taken with the choir was to Brooklyn, and we stayed at the Marriott in Times Square, etc. And that festival, which was run by the Brooklyn Children's Choir, that was a festival, I met this young lady, and her name is Oksana. Mm. And she was a teacher at the American International School and had bought her choir. So I met her, and we had a conversation, and the thing that drew me to Oksana was she had this beautiful piece of music that I wanted the Alaska Youth Choir to sing. Mm. So she gave it to me, and I've, you know, taught it for 26 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then so we had a chat, and they were looking for a collaboration. I said, you know what? Just let me do it. We'll jump on board, and we'll do this together because the Juneau Community Chorus hadn't had their final concert yet.
Mm.
So I thought, why not? And so that's where it began. And we then began to converse and what have you. But to make a long story short, I received a photograph, I think it was last week, from Solomia. And in that photograph was Oksana.
Oh, wow.
And they were playing last weekend in the same bandura concert.
That's amazing.
Isn't it? And so it was like, oh, my goodness.
Everything comes full circle.
It does. And I just, you know, my philosophy nowadays is throw things out into the universe. Hmm. And it will come back and you just run with it. And here we are, 26 years later, concert, collaboration, and that's how it came about.
So are you going to be playing that piece of music on Saturday? Will we be hearing that?
Well,
buy your tickets.
And so
buy your tickets.
Aaron over here, a marketing genius. Yes. I love it.
Yes, yes. But it's a lovely piece of music. And so that's the plan. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking forward to
with members of the chorus, right?
With members of the chorus. Okay. This is a 2 years ago I started the chorus, and one of my students from when I taught, she works at Costco, and every time I'd walk by her, she goes, "Miss Smythe, when are you going to start a choir?" I thought, okay, she's just talking. So every time, "Miss Smythe, when are you going to start a choir?" So then I thought, you know what, I need to do this. Mm. So we just gathered a few folks together, and we formed the Juno Community Chorus. And I just was experimental, still is after 2 years. We've been together for 2 years,
That's
have
great.
A core group of various ages, and so we've just sung together and. Enjoyed the opportunity to be able to.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's
to get so together. Cool. And so now I'm sort of at the stage where, oh, maybe I ought to make this now a 501c3 because I'm retired and,
yeah.
You know, you get to pick and choose.
Now you can have
advance.
A cool
yeah.
retirement project. Yes, yeah,
but it's been very positive and
that's
I've
cool.
thoroughly enjoyed the experience. And so here we are again.
Yeah, that's great. And Olena, this is sort of, is this your first foray into sort of producing an event? And how are you enjoying that so far?
Well, I'm not alone in this. There are some professionals here, including Missouri and Salome and Aaron. I don't think I do it much. I just plant in seeds and they are...
Here you're learning, though. A producer lets everybody else do the work. That's how it works. That's kind of cool. So do you want to do more of this? Would you like to bring more music to Juno like this?
Well, we were just talking about this with Missouri. We can't just stop on one concert.
Can't just stop with one. But this is the first one, and so that's kind of cool. But, Aaron, the concert isn't the only thing happening on Saturday. So, like, there's other things that are going on. Like, I think at 12 o'clock... at Hearthside in the Valley,
yes.
There's going to be both of the Bandura musicians are going to do a little pop-up concert, a little guerrilla marketing, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're going to be out there at the Valley. So that's kind of cool.
You know,
right?
What's funny? I'm going to give flowers where they're due. Elena was the producer of that little pop-up
and
put
nice.
That all together. And the Jack is... just had such a pleasure planning this whole event. And they're going to be playing different music at the pop-up than they're going to be playing at the ticketed show
cool.
Later that night at 7 p.m., where you can buy tickets at jack.org. we're just so excited, and it's been such a pleasure working with these two here.
That's cool. And then, Olena, there's also going to be the V-Seller is involved somehow. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, so V-Seller will sell their amazing food, but it's owned by Gonzalo. It's Apango, who has been selling the best tacos in Juno for many years as El Chingon.
Yeah.
So they will be serving handmade, not handmade.
Fresh
tacos made with blue corn.
And let me tell you, that birria is so good.
Yeah. Isn't so good?
Oh, my gosh. And so, that's going to be at 6 o'clock. They're going to be. Are they going to be outside the Jack?
Yes, they will be outside the Jack.
Oh, so you can show up a little early, mm-hmm. get some dinner, have some birria tacos. Oh, man, that sounds really good. Yeah.
Another thing I would like to add about the chorus, they will be singing in 7 different languages. In
what?
The and the song will be from all over the world. And the whole idea behind it, the strings connect everything. Strings
I
through
see.
Time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Missouri, tell me a little
well,
bit about
know,
that.
Well, you know, I'm, oh my goodness, well, it'll be close to 7 languages.
The pressure's on
I
now.
Have, yeah.
I'm going to be counting.
Well, no, you're fine. Just a little bit, I think the thing that drew me to this collaboration is I love music from other parts of the world. Mm. And the reason why I love that music from other parts of the world is because that folk music truly, truly, I think, is the very core and the essence of the cultures that we have throughout the world. So I have been somebody who, in all of my concerts, have always included pieces of music. From so we're singing some pieces from Africa. There'll be a piece from New Zealand because that's where I'm from. So I'll always have a piece from New Zealand. And then let me see, Africa, New Zealand, Japan. Mm. One of our members in the choirs from Japan, and so we're going to be doing a piece of music as well from Japan, and singing music also from the early, you know, Latin, singing in Latin as well.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and so those are some of the languages that we'll be singing in, and of course different styles as well.
Wow, this is stunning.
Spirituals in there, some jazz.
You have to go and come and see.
This is going to be an event.
And I just wanted to very quickly, you know, with regards to the pop-up, you know, one of the things that I love too about the Community of Juno is that we go to all different places to present this art, because there are those of us who are not as mobile. And so we were looking for a place to rehearse. Mm. And so I approached Riverview Assisted Living. The Bandura are going to rehearse their music at that facility out by Safeway.
So that the residents
there can just come and go and hear again this beautiful music that is from...
Yeah, they have that little space down on the first floor there.
Yes, they have a beautiful area, and the acoustics are just wonderful.
Yeah, it's beautiful
there. So they'll be doing a rehearsal there to...
On Friday they'll do that?
Actually, it is on Friday, yes.
Yeah, okay, wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is awesome. This is called Strings Through Time. It's a evening program of Ukrainian and world music, because there's going to be multiple languages sung here, which is really cool. There's going to be some special guests that are part of this. They are touring. They play the bandura. It's a father and son duo, Ostap and Solomia. And this is going to be on Saturday, May 23rd at 7 p.m. You can get some... wonderful birria tacos at 6 o'clock before that. And if you're out in the valley during the day, you can stop by Hearthside Books at noon to about 12:45 or so. They're going to be playing a little pop-up concert there. That is really, really cool. I love this whole event. It's awesome. And so thank you so much, Gunathchish, for being here today. Is there anything else that you want to mention?
Yeah, one note about the show on Saturday night is that 12 and under are free.
Oh, so 12 and under
are free.
If
you want to bring the family... 12 and under are free.
Oh, that is really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. Bring your kiddos out. It sounds like it's going to be an awesome event. Expose them to the bandura.
Yeah.
Right? The 65-string instrument. That's a thing of wonder. I really appreciate it. Gunathchish, for being here today. Go to jahc.org for more information. And do you have a website for the Juno Community Chorus?
We do not have a website yet, because I wanted to see how serious we were.
Are you on Facebook?
Putting the organization.
Or something?
No, we're not even on Facebook. It's all been by. And so if they wanted to contact me, my email, and it'll be in the program as well, is singjoyfully56@gmail.com.
There you go, singjoyfully56@gmail.com.
Yeah.
I love that. Thank you so much, Elena, Masuri, and Aaron. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate
it.
Thank you for having us.
Gunathchish. Thank you. Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juneau at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com. Federally insured by NCUA.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansengress.com/careers.
You're listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, and it's time once again for Garden Talk. Spring is here, and I welcome now from the UAS Cooperative Extension, Mr. Darren Snyder. Welcome back to the show, Darren.
Hey, thanks, Boston.
Excellent. So my first question, before we even get into it, we're going to talk about soil today, warming it, prepping it, doing all the things for it. But my first question for you, this is our first episode of Garden Talk for 2026. How does this winter that we had impact us in terms of, like, is the ground, like, really wet? Or I'm not a gardener, so inform me on what this, you know, record snowfall did for all the growers out there.
Yeah. So it kind of depends. I'll try not to say that too much, but it does really depend on where you are and what you've done. There are a number of things you can do in order to keep your soil drier, and even over a wet winter like this, if there was some plastic covering over your beds, then they're better off than those that had especially that kind of longer lasting snow cover. So I think that as far as this winter goes, you know, it was just, you know, generally so brutal on all the trees and shrubs and all that ice and the snow that got wet and then just tore off all the branches and everything. So that's kind of the plants. But as far as the soil goes, you know, I can't say that I can think of, like, exactly how the soil itself was affected too much differently.
Especially if you prepped for the winter, right? If you were already a grower, if you haven't been a grower, maybe it'll be a little different for you. But like you said, it depends, mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah. So we're talking about soil today, and all the various aspects of that as people are – are people already sort of getting things in the ground? Are we already in that mode in the middle of May here?
Well, it depends.
Darren, it depends, Snyder.
Yes, there you go. So yeah. One of the things that I'm noticing really dramatically, and unfortunately for me, being over on the dark side over in downtown Douglas compared to our friends over here on this side of the channel, the amount of sun that the afternoons have provided have really, you know, caused these gardens on the east side of the channel to really explode. And, you know, I've been watching the garlic that our friends at the high school that I got to put in with them last fall, and those are just enormous. They're like a foot plus tall, and just such, they're raging awesome.
Wow.
Bulbs coming up, and yeah, there's a big difference between locations but things are starting up. And things are starting to grow pretty well, depending where you are. And but, you know, especially the plants that are trying to overwinter, that we want to overwinter, every spring kind of has its own surprise. That's part of the fun of gardening, is kind of see what made it.
See what got through.
Yeah.
Now, you said you're on the sort of the mountainside, the darker side, less sun over on Douglas. Mm-hmm. And does that make your summer a little bit later in terms of, you know, seeing things happen, or the growth of things take a little bit longer to stem because it doesn't have the vitamin D, as they say?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. you know, there are some of our longtime champions, Susanna Sandy Williams, who for decades had very successful gardens in downtown Douglas. So, you know, we can't moan too much because it can be done. But a lot of it's just best practices, which, you know, I've got a lot of those to share with folks here. But there are ways to really maximize wherever you are. What you can get out of your soil and how
cool.
you can kind of prepare it.
Well, let's talk soil in terms of, you know, fertilizing, prepping, warming. What are all the things that we need to, where do we want to start?
Yeah, I think a good place to start is what we call the soil type. And the texture is a technical term for when we're talking about, like, how much, what size particles are they? Are they sand? Are they silt? Are they clay? And that kind of like, as you say, you know, sand, we're all familiar with sand, and it's kind of gritty and, you know, sandy beach and everything else. But silt is kind of, gets kind of slimy, and you can kind of feel that. You can, you know, the silt that we find in the wetlands or something like that that have come out from the glacier, they feel kind of slippery and slimy, but they're actually, there's a bit more kind of size to them compared to clay particles, which are much smaller. Mm. So the reason why we pay attention to what the composition is of the mineral fraction, the mineral portion of the soil, is that it affects how water moves or doesn't move through it. Generally, of course, in Southeast Alaska, we're trying to get water to move through the soil. We're trying to, because it's there, you know, too much is the side of things that we get on. And so you can do tests. You can do the jar test, which is kind of famous, where you kind of put some soil in a jar and you shake it up and you see what settles. And how fast it settles, and that gives you an idea of your percentages of these different materials.
Mm.
And that can kind of give you an idea. But you can also just see your soil. If your soil doesn't have much organic matter, so it's not, and it's kind of more gray than like darker brown, which organic matter will tend towards, then you know, that gray soil, when you're looking at it, you can tell if it's kind of compacted. If water has a hard time getting through it, then you probably have pretty silty soil. And that's pretty common in the valley and other places where you're using some of that native soil that exists already. Or you might have ordered soil from a supplier that may not be a gardener themselves and not actually have the soil that you want to be working with. Whereas if you get soil from a source that is, you know, more of a garden soil source. I'm not going to name names. That's part of my job is to be somewhat neutral on all this stuff. But there are. You do buyer beware. You need to make sure that, especially if you're buying it, but even free is pretty expensive if you got the wrong stuff, because it can be, and I speak from experience, you know, whether it's, you know, free stuff can be really rocky, it can be highly silty, and you just have to really work it, whether you're sifting some of the larger rocks and gravel out or you're ending up, because if you do have silty soil, it's not the end of the world. You just need to add a whole lot of organic matter is the best practice. You can add sand, but once you already have kind of a silty soil, then you're going to want to just add as much organic matter as you can get into that, which does help with the drainage. And again, you know, kind of back to that the goal with these soils is to allow water to move through them. And so if it's too silty, that will be a problem. Also, to help out with that, that's why we have raised beds generally in our gardens. You never general practice is not to grow anything at grade level, whatever that the level is of your yard that you think of, like, oh, that's where your grass is or where you walk, that level, whatever you're growing, whatever plants you're growing are going to want to be up above that grade level because otherwise the water is going to be settling where those roots are, and it's therefore colder. It therefore does not have as much oxygen going to those roots. Mm-hmm. Both of those are really important factors. And then all the biological activity that's in there also is colder and wetter. So raised beds are really important. What you're and how you're making those raised beds can make a difference too. If you have the luxury of having a lot of space and you don't actually need to have a or want to have kind of the classic wood-sided garden beds that we have, then the sun's heat can actually hit that soil on the side and warm it up a little bit more. But it's kind of a give and take. If you want it to be a little bit more kempt and kind of know where your garden starts and stops, then you might want to choose to have a garden bed.
Well, you were talking about, you know, the type of soil, and then you were just talking a little bit about the warming of the soil. Explain that to me. Like, the sun can do some of that, but then can I also do some of that? I love also the problem if your soil is too silty to add more organic material to it, right, to help the water flow through.
Yep.
Okay, so then when I'm warming the soil, why am I warming the soil and how do I warm the soil?
Yeah, so basic biology is that the warmer it is to a degree, then the more biological activity there is. So those roots are going to be happier. The all the microorganisms that are in there consuming debris and excreting and making those nutrients available to the plants, it's all kicked into gear. It's like the magic and beauty of spring and summer is that there's just so much life going on. It's because of the heat that's coming from the sun. And so
is that tough here in Juneau? Because like these days when there's rain, like it's sometimes it's really cold.
And it's cold for us and it's cold for those plants. It's cold for their tops. It's cold it's cold for their roots. So that's a good practice. You'll see, best practices is to have some type of a cover over your garden bed at this point in the if you really want maximum production. And, I know there's, of course, limitations when you're talking about larger plants. But if you're talking about garden beds, even some ornamentals, I think that my friend downtown, maybe she was just joking with them, but I saw that she had some umbrellas up over plants, but she's trying to keep them dry as well. But it was kind of fun.
Well, I think umbrellas are kind of cool because they could give a little bit of a design element to it too.
For
that's
sure.
Kind of fun. I like that. It doesn't have to be a sheet of plastic necessarily.
Right. But it does matter if you're really wanting to, just like if you're imagining keeping yourself warm, tucked in bed, tucked in. If you have a sheet of plastic directly on the surface of the soil, then there's not going to be a breeze that's going to be blowing that heat away. It's going to be kind of trapped in there. Same thing if you have a hoop, and then you seal it on the edges. That heat's going to stay in there. The classic greenhouse effect going on. It really works. It's pretty amazing. So having those covers, whether it be right on the surface or over a hoop. And interestingly, our assumption is that, black plastic will attract heat. But what has been found is that having that clear plastic where the light rays can come through, especially the infrared can come through, then it actually heats up the soil and gets trapped underneath the plastic compared to a black plastic where it just heats up the surface and doesn't come in.
Yeah, it bounces off.
There is special IRT, infrared transparent plastic also that you can buy. It's green and there are other colors as well, but it's like a super high-tech plastic that you can get too if you're being really fancy and wanting to spend a little extra money.
I love that. Okay, that's cool. That's a good tip. Yeah. So black plastic, not as good as the other kind of plastic.
Yeah, clear.
And I was reading a little bit. Is there something about avoiding heavy early watering? Like you don't want to overwater? Tell me a little bit about that before
Go. I don't know anybody who's doing much watering right now.
Yeah.
But
you don't need to,
but
really.
But with your watering, you do, because it's chilling. And and as well, it depends on the size of the plants, but it is something to consider is that, young baby plants, smaller plants require less than the larger plants for nutrients as well as water. But the watering that you do, as many gardeners are aware, if you have a vessel like a rain barrel, then that water not only will be clear of chlorine, if I forget whether we're even chlorinating nowadays, but also it's warmer than what's going to come out of the hose. And so that's a factor. You definitely want to have it be, if you can, ambient temperature rather than what's coming out of the hose.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Darren, we're out of time for today. Garden Talk is just beginning. We'll be here all summer.
Yeah.
We'll talk about various different things over the course of the season. I really appreciate you coming on today. Thank you so much, Darren.
You're welcome, Boston. Happy growing.
And that's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we meet Dr. Murray Butner, a new physician at Bartlett Family Medical, plus a review of the C-Week program, a collaboration between the university and the Juno School District, and updates with the Juno Commission on Aging. We are Wednesday through Friday right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Hawk Bay 91.7. Find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Cheesh!